question, the $20 billion question, which I get a lot, and I'll start, and then I'll ask Rabbah to give an important clarity, because I think it's needed. This $20 billion for school choice, is that the answer? Is that going to pay for all your children, grandchildren's tuition? So the simple answer I'm going to tell you is I don't think so. I think the answer to that is the flyers on your tables, the school choice flyers. They're ready. Our private school choice programs in about 25 states, and many of them with large Jewish communities that are benefiting, where you have children who choose Jewish day schools are receiving, in some cases, their entire tuition is paid for. Most of the money for education is paid for by the states, generated by the state, and stays in the state. And that's where the money is. And that's where the programs that will be most helpful to allow children to choose between public, charter, or private school, they're going to come from the states. Federal government is not the answer to that problem. And many of our directors, as you see, are actually doing that in their respective states. So what could this $20 billion do, or what will it probably not do? I'm going to defer to Rabbi Cohen, and then, like I said, there are people who have questions. I know I'm sticking around, and if you have any questions for the panelists offline, we'll be happy to take them afterwards.
Well, AD is absolutely right. I mean, school choice, and that's a general category for vouchers and tax credits, is primarily a state issue. And I'll talk about school choice, but before I do that, I'd like to talk about just basic, regular federal programs like Title I and special ed, programs that our schools use very heavily and don't really necessarily engage in the school choice debate. We hear a lot in the incoming administration and in Republican circles in general to reduce the federal role in education. There's talk about getting rid of the Department of Education. There are always proposals to block grant all the programs together, so just basically send all the money down to the state and let the state decide how to divvy it up. And maybe there's some rationale to that, so the locals will know where the money is needed, where it should go. But for us, it's not a good thing. Because, and I've said this to so many people in Washington, because we need that federal string. There's a string attached to that money. When it goes from the federal government to the states, there's a string attached to that money. And the string that's attached, it's required by law, by federal law, is that you have to treat private schools equitably. And we know that on the local level, on the state and local level, our schools are not always treated equitably. And if it was up to them to do with the money as they decided, I think a good argument could be made that we would get the short end of that stick. So in general, we talk about block granting the program, reducing the federal law role. Yeah, maybe there's a rationale, but we need and we must always fight for that federal string which allows for equity between our schools and public schools. In terms of school choice, in general, yes, it's a state issue. So what happens on the federal level? Well, the proposals that have been put forward in the past are very limited in scope. They might be model programs, they might be incentive programs, but it's not, real money going to real tuition, to real families for real tuition. Also, and this has been a trend, that has not been good for us in regard to school choice programs. There are limitations, you have to be in a violent neighborhood. You have to be in a neighborhood where the schools are underperforming. The child might have to be sitting in public school for 2 or 3 years before the child becomes eligible for that kind of voucher. So those kinds of proposals, lemaisa, don't help us that much. I think that rather than the general voucher idea, maybe in regard to specific programs like Title I, like special ed, federal programs, the idea of portability, basically taking the money and using it wherever you want to go, that's something that's gained attention over the last few years and acceptance. It's becoming more popular. It hasn't passed in Congress yet, but proposals under the Republican Congress, it hasn't passed. But proposals have been put forward, and it is gaining momentum. So that's one area that in those particular programs, there might be some notion of portability that would benefit our schools. I think overall, I think we're better off, and we've always been better off in regard to these tax credit approach. Vouchers is complicated. It's not really a federal. There's not really a strong federal avenue to go down to provide vouchers. But tax credits is something that the federal government can provide. It is very much in line with the Republican philosophy on taxes. And it's something that I think will gain popularity, and we have to push more. And I'm just going to say one more thing. One of the very disappointing aspects of the president-elect's tax program is that he wants to do away with the charitable deduction. And as Jonas had mentioned before, I mean, without those kinds of tax benefits, our institutions will be severely hurt. It's interesting that his first proposal included it. It was he strongly supported it, and then the second proposal, it disappeared. And one of the things we need to do now is to get to the bottom of that, where that discrepancy came from, and make sure that such an important benefit in the tax code remains for our schools and our institutions.
So one last comment from Haskell, and then I think we'll...
I just want to follow up on the $20 billion magical silver bullet that's going to fix everything. So if we go back to what I had said at the opening of my statement, that's called one of the things I said, irrational exuberance. I think that it's unrealistic to think that there's going to be a cure-all and all of a sudden our tuition crisis, which is absolutely a crisis and it takes up more time than any other issue for our organization nationally and locally. In a 10-year vision that I foresee for our community, and in speaking to that, these decisions of where this money will go and how they will be allocated will be made at the federal level in consultation with Congress, because let's remember, they run for re-election every 2 years. They're going to want to make sure their constituents are knowing that they're involved in it. And because of that involvement of Congress and at the state level, as AD said, I repeat my call that every Jewish community must engage immediately and adopt their Congress member and bring their attention of their issues to that member. Once they've done that or need help in doing that, I strongly urge them to contact us, contact A.D. Mutzen. I'll ask him to repeat his email address in a moment. And we have to make sure that we force the issue. Once you bring that relationship to the Aguda and bring it into a national conversations, I think there's some work to be done that could be successful. You also need to be ready to advocate with that member on the issues, whether in home or coming to Washington. We need you. And my last words are, success breeds success. Ask any activist. Ask anyone who's ever been involved in accomplishing something for the Tzibur. When you get something in your hand and you feel like you've accomplished, it's very, very strong. Get that feeling of accomplishment, and we can really make a difference.
Thank you, Haskell. My email address, both people want to contact me to get to our regional state directors, to get on our email list that we send out for the government affairs news, is admutzen@agudathisrael.org. Business cards if you want to talk to me right now. And thank you very much for being here. Thank you for those who are listening, as well as those who are here, for what you have done in your communities as activists and what you will continue doing, because that is the key to our success.